On this week's A Slice of Golf, things get heated as we talk through the PGA's new player fund. We review some shenanigans in our very first competition of the year. Plus, how can you leave the Race to Dubai without playing an event on the European Tour? It's A Slice of Golf. Welcome along with me, Tim Williams.
Me, Ben Fowler.
And myself, Chris Wright.
Good morning, afternoon, or evening, sports fans. We're back again. It's another week, another episode of Slice of Golf. I'm here with Chris and Ben, as always, and we're fresh from competition, ladies and gentlemen. It was our first major of the year, weekend just gone. I know that you're all tentatively out there, tender hooks, waiting to hear how we all got on, whether we embarrassed ourselves, who brought home the title. I'm going to do, spoiler alert, the cup is not in the presence of the three of us. I regret to inform. But brilliant day. Great to be out competing with all the guys and girls in the group. Who shall I come to first for a bit of a post-round digest? Chris, why don't you kick us off? Give us a little bit of a digest of the day as it was, how it played out. What were the headlines?
Are we just going to blow past the fact that, I know this is a podcast, but for anyone who's watching this on YouTube, that The Rock is currently looking at from behind Ben. So there is a life-size cutout of Dwayne The Rock Johnson behind Ben. So that's quite incredible. The recap of the day. Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed just seeing everybody. Like, I know that sounds silly, but it was just so good to see everybody again. One of the guys in my group, I genuinely don't think I've seen since before the birth of my kid, who's now 17 months old or something. So he came up to me and was like, "You've got a kid now, right?" I was like, "Yeah, he's 17 months old." How's the day? The day was great. The day was awesome. I think watching everybody tee off on the first was great. Knowing that you're in the final group, which I was. Was I last off the tee? I think I was as well. So
that's nice.
That was really nice. I had a really good match. The event is an individuals event, but there's also a team aspect in it as well. So we had 1v1 matches going through. And do you know what? When I looked at the leaderboard, because we had the live leaderboards going on as we were playing, it got towards the end and it was just like a sea of red. Like, you guys were just Tim, were you on my team or were you on the other team?
No, I was on your team.
Okay, fine. So I just looked at the leaderboard and I was like, it was like red, and I was like, oh man, this is going really badly for us. And then me and Johnny were having a really good match, to be fair, and I think I picked him 2-1 in the end. But there was a period of play where me and him were looking at each other going, neither of it, like, we were going winning holes. We never really got an all square on our hole. And it was like, neither of us are winning holes based on good golf, are we? We're like, no, it's just the other person is more shitter than the other person is what's happening. So, or less shit than the other person. So, yeah, I'll give you a recap of my round. I started really, and the front nine was just weak. Our front nine was just really, 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 really weak. I hit 12 points. And I could not figure out how to hit my irons. And the place that we played, you could go round with just your irons and score really well. Like, you don't need a driver really on any of it, except the problem was my driver was the only thing that I was actually full of confidence hitting. But interestingly, and this follow, I think we spoke about, did we speak about this last week? Tim, a couple of weeks ago, you and I played and yeah. I stood on the tee and was like, I'm going to fade this and actually hit a fade. Now, I don't hit fades. My normal regular shot has always been a big
snap hook.
Yeah, a snap hook. Previous to that, it was a big high draw, right? That was always my shape. If I hit a fade, I didn't hit fades. It was a slice. Like, there was no in between. And on the range, the couple of days before, every time I tried to hit my usual draw, it was like a duffed shot or a hook, and I was like, I've had enough of this. So I just started trying to hit fades. Well, I hit fades and I got in the fairway at the range. So I decided on the day, I was like, I'm not even gonna try and hit a hook, I'm just gonna try and hit fades all day. And I was absolutely smashing them. Even the guy that I was playing with was like, you're actually hitting this quite a long way at the moment. And I was like, I am. And it's in play, which is absolutely amazing. The problem being was, like, I didn't even want to take driver off the first, but I have no, like, I was like, I haven't even practiced this shot with a three wood or a four. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. So I took driver off the first, took driver off the third. No, I didn't. I took three wood off the third. And then, but then I was just taking driver everywhere, which you put them me into positions where I was like, I'm now playing distances that I don't know how to play. Like, it was like driver 77 yards in. I'm like, I don't have a shot for 77 yards. And then I was putting myself into like more off the back of the green or whatever.
And the thing is with that golf course as well, we've played it so many times that before you even step up there, you already know what you're typically taking off the tee. So you already know what you're taking as your next shot in. So for you to be changing is going to throw you.
Yeah, and it did throw me. And then when I hit, I can't remember which hole it was. Oh, I can remember which hole it was. What's the long par? The first par five you get to goes around to the left. It's like the
six.
Get stuck in a mountain of rough on the left. Dolly a shot that goes about 10 yards. Do a nice recovery shot from there. And the wind was kind of coming in. It was really windy. Did you, like, you guys obviously. No, it was very, 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 very windy. And I was like, is that wind into me or is it across? And I must have thrown grass up about 100 times. I was like, I don't know which way this is going. And I just looked at the guy that was on my team and I just said to him, I was like, did you club up for your shot? And he was like, yeah, I clubbed up. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna club up. So I club up and I hit this shot. And it just fucking went, I hit it so sweet and it just went miles. It went way left in the wind as the wind took it across, and it just ended up behind a tree in mountains of rough over the back of the green. And I was just like, I don't know what to do. And then from that point on with my irons, I was like, I haven't got a clue. I was just like, I don't know what I'm doing with the irons. So struggled to get 12 points on the front nine, if I'm honest, really struggled. And then back nine, started playing some golf, hit 19 points in with a blob. So I was like, well, this is ridiculous.
That's excellent scoring.
So I ended up on 31 points. And I was still on the 18th. And I looked, because we were the last group in, I was looking at the leaderboard going, if I can get an actual birdie here, I'm in with a chance at least of getting to 32. And hit my drive into the wind, left myself a 4-iron in over the lake. So I'd gone out to the left, missed the fairway. And I probably put it on the green. I was like, I'll give myself a birdie chance. Obviously missed the birdie putt. But I was like, where was this in the front nine? Like, where was this in the front nine? Like, why wasn't I doing this early on? Because I'd have smashed it. But yeah, I won my match. Came, I want to say fourth, because there was like three people in tied second, maybe fifth. Three people in tied second and one, the guy who won it. So yeah, loved it. My game was a bit all over the place. Got a lot to work on before I get out again. Play on this weekend though, so excited for that. Yeah, just I'm a bit like meh. I'm like, there was some really good stuff and then there was some really, really shit stuff. Just couldn't hit my iron.
Yeah, that is a problem. Ben, how did you get on?
Wait. New putting grip.
Come on, talk to us about the saw.
I didn't take putting stats, which is probably quite silly, but there wasn't any moment that I was like, I need to switch back to the old putting grip. So therefore, I'm going to take it into this weekend. And this weekend, I'll actually do stats with the putts, tell you how many putts I have.
So interesting kind of point of conversation and swiveling back to that. One of the lads who hasn't played golf in a fair amount of time listened to the podcast last week and decided to change his putting grip on the practice green shortly before we decided to go out. And he's coming in and was like, yeah, it was okay. Didn't really feel much different, which was balmy going into the biggest event of the year.
Who was that? Which player was that?
Ollie Purcell.
Yes, no, he was definitely making more putts.
Really?
Possibly. He was
based on trying it out for the first time on the practice green, I would say that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Good on him.
There was four new four players playing with like using new putting grips at the event.
Out of 12, which is quite a high percentage of quite a high percentage of people, considering the amount of golf that a lot of those people have played as well. That's quite a change. All in, you know, great to see everyone. Kind of a lot of this is going to echo Chris, really. Not a great day on the links for a lot of it, but literally the best performance of my life for some of it. So first off, start off with a couple of negatives. It took 5 hours. And as a lead group, that's slightly slightly terrible, really. I mean, we got through 14 and one of the boys looked at his phone and was like, you want to have a guess at how long we've been? It was 4.5 hours through 14 holes. That's,
people were just taking every, it looked like every 3 minutes or something, really.
And then kind of another negative, I really, really, really burnt the side of my head. The sun was pretty strong. I had a haircut, first post-lockdown haircut the other day. Got it cut quite short around the side, and my head is still feeling a bit delicate. And I think quite a few of the group made that mistake because it was only 14 degrees, but the wind was strong. There wasn't a cloud in the sky, and there was some serious sunburn going on. Now, it's kind of on with the golf, 29 points. Yeah, average to crap. But I hit 13 putts on the front nine, 14 on the back, so wow. 27 in total, which is the best I've ever played, best I've ever putted.
Really good.
The wedges felt good. I think there was only one wedge shot I hit kind of chipping where I didn't get up and down. So all of my chips were within kind of 5-6 feet, which is pleasing.
So 27 putts total. How many shots were you taking to get to the green?
Yeah. So here is where the shit fest begins. So again, looking at the stats, I hit one green in regulation all day.
Wow.
One. Yeah. And 29% of fairways hit, which when broken down was 4 in total. So there we go. Basically, to summarize than that, the wind absolutely killed me the other day. So still embedding in, trying to adjust for more speed and trying to get the swing there. There were times where I just was hitting the golf ball and I had no idea where it was going. Stepped up on one tee with the driver, got it up in the air, and it went about as far right as humanly possible. I don't think I've ever seen a golf ball hit by myself go as far right. Just again, timing was just way off, and you combine that with a pretty strong breeze, it's quite difficult. Quite difficult to go around.
I don't remember a time playing. We haven't played in wind that strong for a long time. No. I can't think of many times that we've played in wind that strong.
Well, this and also for me, it was when I was kind of recounting the round afterwards, it was deceiving as well, because I did the same as you. You pick up grass and you start trying to figure out where it went. There were two occasions where I was like, right, this is strong enough wind that I'll take one less club, thinking, right, that's at least 10, 15 yards worth of wind. We're talking a wedge. It's only about 100 yards in. The first two times they fell short. I was like, this doesn't make any sense. The wind feels pretty strong. I thought it was downwind. So then I said to myself, right, next time, I'm not gonna change club. I'm just going to play the distance. Needless to say, absolutely nuked it, airmailed the green. It went 15, 20 yards beyond it. And then you put yourself in a situation, well, I've got no idea what's going on. When I'm playing a wedge into the green, it's either 15 yards short or 20 yards long. Makes it quite difficult. So, all in, great fun. A lot of mixed golf and a positive based on this weekend. Moved into the new flat. A car has been ordered. So we are
due.
We have a car soon. So London public will no longer be pissed off with me for taking my trolley on the tube and on trains at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning from this day.
Did you win your match?
Say that again.
Did you win your match?
I did, yeah. 1-2-1, thankfully. Joe, I know you're listening. You had an absolute shocker, which it went very well. It really helped me out. It should have been 2-1. It should have been more. Could have been more. There's just any time he gave me an opportunity, I just didn't take it. It was just crap. And I kind of dribbled my way to the end.
I was watching the leaderboard, and after four or was it three holes, he was on 11 points. No, four holes. He was on 11 points. I was like,
yeah, he went two up. He absolutely raced it.
And then he didn't score a point for six holes or something, I imagine, because he finished, I don't know what he finished on, but yeah, I was like, what on earth has happened? I was like, yeah, Joe's my man to win this event. Nope, wrong.
And he's one of the most consistent golfers you play with or against. So it's again, when the draw was made, I was like, right, I have to bring my good game to beat him. And unfortunately, he had his one off day, and my off day was not quite so off.
Slightly less bad. Yeah, I mean, just to complete the recurring theme that seems to be going on, you know, when people talk about the weather and they say, you've had all four seasons in one day, that pretty much applies to my golf game on Saturday, because it was one of those where, like, you're in the car on the way home and you're thinking, I don't really know what to think of that. I couldn't really think, well, basically, I'm going to throw some stats out there just to explain how things went. So, my first five holes, I was 2 over par and 3 underneath my handicap.
Well, yeah, I saw that.
I saw that on the app.
Yeah, I was like, so, is this right? Should I message their group to see if they're entering the scores right?
I came out the traps like an absolute freight train and couldn't actually quite believe what was happening to me. I didn't feel like I was playing that well. And I was like, I've definitely played better than this, but I've never been in a position where literally a quarter of the way around, I'm 3 shots under my handicap. And then for the second, the 6th to 9th hole, the rails came off completely on my front nine. So I'll throw some stats out there for my front nine. So where shall we begin? Yeah, so I went around. So I say I was on 13 Stableford points after 5.
Strong.
Finished my front nine on 15 points. So not brilliant. Now that was with, I had 3 penalty strokes during my front nine and 15 putts. So it was just
right.
No one part of my game was being consistent for any period of time. I'd have 2 or 3 holes where my driver was red hot and 2 or 3 holes where my putter just couldn't miss, but never at the same time. So yeah, carried, and then more shenanigans on the back nine. Birdied the hardest hole on the course. 100 that can't be right. Apparently I hit every fairway on the back nine. That's mental. But 21 putts. So again, no consistency with my putting on the back nine. So overall I shot a 93 for 32 points to take tied 2nd on the day. But yeah, just on reflection of that, like I said, in the car on the way home, I was like, well, I don't feel particularly satisfied with that effort, but yet half of the holes I've played today, I've played excellently.
Yeah.
Like half of the holes I've played potentially like to the limit of how well I can play these based on my current ability, and yet I'm not happy.
I think across the board as well, when we were having a beer afterwards, which by the way, was so nice to be able to, yeah, to do again and not have to get in the car and go away. I kind of feel like that was the topic of conversation across the board for everyone. Everyone was kind of sat there like, not really too sure what to think of that, because everyone was scoring, playing pretty averagely, scoring, yeah, relatively well. Right. And
Right, 34 points won. There was 3 people on 32. 2 of us on 31. Like it was relatively close, but I think it showed like, normally there is someone who's scoring 36 points plus. Like it's not often someone's winning on 34 points, right? So I think we were all kind of like a bit beaten up by the wind and going, you know what? I'm pleased I've scored over 30 points in that wind. But then you still look back and go, oh, there's a lot of shots that I feel like I've just
wasted. There's a lot of drops out there. From a selfish point of view, and this is going to sound awful because we have roundly criticized people for doing this on previous podcasts, but from a selfish ego point of view, I absolutely felt really, really satisfied with doing it. I managed to hit into the group in front of me on Saturday. I think not very hard.
Was in the group in front of you.
Yeah, I was.
Yeah, like on the surface, that's a lie. On the surface, I was elated because it's probably one of the longest drives I've ever hit in my life. But I was slightly bit like has rolled into someone's bag. That's a bit naughty. But you know, you take the rough for the smooth, and I hit 2 of the longest ever drives I hit in my life. So that's what I'm going to focus on from that exchange. To be brutally honest.
I've got one more thing to mention.
Okay.
And this is important. This is part of our judgment of golf courses.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think I've ever had a post-round meal at Chelsfield before.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the beer situation, when she came out, was like it was Bex or something else. I was like, oh, okay, yeah. Average. Then when the food came out, I didn't have a club sandwich, though, to be fair. I had dirty fries, and my God, they were good. That was one of the best post-round meals or snacks or whatever you want to call it that I've had for a long time. That was some good food.
You could tell it was like 12 people that had not been in each other's company for a while, because there was a lot, the volume of food that was being consumed in the post-round debrief was quite impressive. Yeah, shame you couldn't stay around and have a load of beers, because obviously everyone was driving, can't hang around. But I think we focused our efforts on the food situation as a result. Also, disclaimer, I didn't have a club sandwich. That's bad, isn't it? I had dirty burger. Oh, I went for the Pete Finch dirty burger.
Dirty burger.
Yeah. But I have had the club sandwich there before. And it's pretty good. So well done. Well done, Chelmsford Lakes.
Yeah, and I also had a nice addition to the course as well, is they've added the buggy bar in, obviously trying to make back.
Oh, and that guy turned up.
It was, I have to admit, after that, it was curtains for Foulis. Mm-hmm. After that, I had my tolerance to alcohol is crap at the best of times. I had a Bulmers and I swear to God, I was stood over my next wedge shot and I completely forgot how to swing a golf club. And duffed it 5 yards. I was like, well, this is pathetic. I've had half a beer and now I can't see the wedge. What? What is going on?
I'm not going to put the name out there, but I also know that he's listening, so I'm not going to call him out by name. But for those of you that were listening last week, you will be well aware that we were talking about a member amongst our midst who was pretty much in the lowest of low places coming into the round this weekend. Fair to say his fears ahead of the round were realised.
He was asking for tips on the driving range from someone who's not qualified and hasn't swung a golf club in like 8 months himself.
I'd encapsulate it down to a small microcosm of a moment that I've never seen before. So this is, if you're listening, right, I want you to just picture what I'm about to describe to you. So we're on the driving range. We're still about an hour before we even start playing. And, you know, we're all there kind of having a bit of a nice time, very casual. You can hear a few people, you know, every now and then someone strikes it not brilliantly and you sort of throw a bit of a barb over, or you can hear someone hit it a bit heavy, whatever. I'd pretty much done all I wanted to do. I was kind of, yeah, fine-ish, whatever. I was having a bit of a chat with two or three members of our group, and I've turned around and I've seen the aforementioned member of our group crouched on his haunches, holding onto his golf club with his head pressed down toward the ground, resting on his golf club, just in the absolute, the lowest I've ever seen anyone look. And this was on the driving range before we started. No, actually, I can top that. He then followed this up with trying to hit his next shot and just dropping his club on the driving range after he hit his shot. He was that demoralized. Again, I'm not going to name names. He'll be listening to this. He knows I'm talking about him. And he did say to me on the way around that he did find last week's episode very, very funny. So good on him for having a sense of humor about it. But he was in a tough place.
Every fear realized on that driving range going, this is going to be as bad as I thought it was going to be, isn't it?
When I was talking about being worried about hitting into groups in front of me, there was one point where he actually said, well, don't worry, I'll hit first because I am not going to go anywhere near the group in front of me, so I may as well tee off. And we were like, oh, yeah, good one, mate. Yeah, funny, good gag. You know, good that you can not take yourself too seriously. Yeah, duffed it into the trees, didn't they? Off to the left, so...
I looked at the live leaderboard and I thought, there's a high possibility that at the ninth, Ben leaves.
We've done so well on not mentioning any names.
I've called him out.
The ball.
There's a high chance. Can I bleep that out afterwards? No, I can't bleep that out.
The thing is, anyone who's going to listen who knows him, we all know. They all know who we're talking about anyway.
Yeah, there's a high chance he leaves it. Like, how I was looking at his scoring, I was like, even if it was me, I'd be like, I'm going to disappear off into the darkness here. But he played on, he played.
What I will say is, and again, not a professional, not a coach, don't take any advice that I say or anything like that. This is just pure observation. I said to him sort of about maybe 14th, 15th hole, I was like, I'm telling you now, the vast majority of the problem you've got is it's in your head, because you're windmilling and trying to fix things on the course. But to be honest, like, there are bits of his game which you can see it. Like, he chipped, like, first hole of the day, he chipped in for par. So that was amusing. And then his last hole of the day, I think he hit something like, I don't know, 7-iron or something like that. Lovely shot onto the green. So it's in there.
That's golf in a nutshell, isn't it?
Exactly.
Having your darkest round. But there's always that one shot that just brings you back. Brings you back for a little bit more.
So, you know, scientifically proven to those of you who are listening and are maybe in a bit of a fit of despair, that look, even when you're at a lowest ebb, we've proved it now, you can still go out on the golf course and you can hit good shots. So don't be too low if you are despairing. It's okay. It's all right. Hang on in there. The game will love you back at some point. Right. Enough of our shenanigans. Moving on to the pros. Zurich Classic at the weekend. Team event. Interestingly, and I've got nothing to base this off more than YouTube comments and social comments, bit of a mixed reception for the team event on the internet. Really? Yeah. Oh, I think a lot of people loving it, but then some people just, there was one comment. I think I was watching the Schwarzschild and Oosthuizen highlights round, and the YouTube comment was simply, don't like this format, boring. And that was it. That was the comment. So
he sounds like he would be great fun to go and have a beer.
Yeah, a man or lady of a few words, making their feelings known on that one. But Cam Smith and Mark Leishman, as pretty much all of us called last week, coming in with the win, took them into the playoff to do it. It was Australia against South Africa when it came down to the playoff. It was those two boys against Oosthuizen and Schwarzschild even. Louis. First shot on the playoff hole, straight into the drink.
I mean, I don't know whether he takes a practice swing normally. I would assume he does. But Nick Faldo kind of jumped on that straight away. It was just like he just stepped up onto the tee, no practice swing, and then just absolutely dispatched it into the water. Sorry, Tim. I cut right.
No. I was more than happy to take that one on. Practice swings is a bit of a weird one, isn't it?
That's the thing. But I think particularly when they're at the pros, you know, they hit the ball however many thousand times a month, say, you know, do they need it? I don't know. Everyone's got their own pre-shot routine. Faldo brought it up, so I would assume that Oosthuizen usually does, and the fact that he didn't do a practice swing meant that it was something different. But I think for someone who's got, you know, as everyone always speaks about, one of the most beautiful swings on tour, and it's just one of those players that you just never seem to hit a bad shot. For him to go and hit that, because it missed by quite a long way, was quite a surprise.
Yeah, I mean, from a personal point of view, my thoughts during my practice swings, and I usually have two or three before I strike the ball, and they're nothing more than, nope, that's not it. Nope, that's not it. Yep, that'll do. Off we go.
Yeah, well, that's it though. You just want to go into your shot knowing that you've got the right feeling, don't you? You can't. If you're hitting your practice swing fat, you should probably go another one, because that's not the thought you want going into your head going into the main shot.
I literally now verbalize it. I literally verbalize that. No, that one.
Do
that's
that.
The one. And they usually preceded, the ones that I say no on are usually preceded with a fairly heavy thud of the ground and potentially a tee box mud pelt to be thrown out past the person who's actually teeing off.
I heard a stat again. Let me jump in there. I heard a stat about Oosthuizen today, which kind of blew my mind. It's now meant he's finished second at every major championship, a PGA Tour event, and a PGA Tour team event. Wow. He just has a problem getting over the line. The last time he won a PGA Tour event, we'll go in air quotes with that one, was the Open all the way back in, what was it, 2010, 2011? So he's finished second at everything, basically. In every format of golf he could possibly wish to play, it's just getting it over the line. It's like Tony Finau on steroids.
I was just about to say.
Mr. Tony Finau.
So let's do a little on the spot prediction game right now. Okay. Disregarding previous years and whatever, because I know that obviously Uthman's won on tour. Who do you think is going to win an event first in terms of our champion second places? Uthman or Finau?
Finau.
Oh, straight in there. Okay. Because I'm personally going the other way. I'm saying Uthman.
Yeah, I'm actually going Uthman as well. I feel like Finau's gone a little bit cold at the moment. And yeah. I don't know whether it was again this week or the previous week, but it looks like another putting grip, which I'm like, clearly there's something going on there and he's not happy because he keeps changing.
But I mean, to be fair, we've said it from when we started doing the podcast a year ago, where like Finau's stats are nuts until he gets to the putting green. And then for whatever reason, he just cannot get the ball in the hole.
Speaking of Finau, I have huge appreciation for his designated team name. Himself and it was Cam Champ, wasn't it? He was playing with this weekend.
Team Send It.
And they were.
They really did send it. Like, they really did. Coming back to, did you guys enjoy the format? Like, do you enjoy them? Because I thoroughly enjoy seeing a different format. I thoroughly enjoy the teams. The best ball, obviously, you're just going in for some wonderful golf scores. Like, you're just seeing like 9 under, 10 under, like 11 under on those. And I just, it sounds really silly, but it's the same game that we play. Like when we're playing in a pair, and let's say it's me and Tim, I'm like, I want Tim to get net birdie on this hole and then I fuck it up. And then on the next hole, I get net birdie when he fucks up. And they're playing the same game. It's just with much better scores, right? So they're still going, okay, if I play badly here, is my partner getting a birdie to rescue me? I just want to throw this out there. You remember last week on the fantasy draft, you both called me out for my strategy of picking birdies. Sure, I didn't win. I came second to Timbo, but didn't do too badly. I came out firing. Where my squad struggled was on the alternate shot and on the second days, and that is a really interesting format.
I love alternate shot. Absolutely love it.
Why do you love it though? What is it about it that makes you like enjoy that format?
I think it because it highlights that, you know, a lot of golf that we see on TV, you only see the guys that are playing really, really well. You only ever see them when they're at the top of the leaderboards. Whereas I think you could have a player that is playing leaderboard topping stuff and his teammate is playing pretty crap, right? Yeah. So he's just not got his good stuff with him. And you're going to see that on TV coverage. So I think you see the pros being normal human beings because you actually get to see them hit pretty average shots because they do. You know, a lot less than what we do. But I think I appreciated that they may have one player who's on absolute fire, but his mate's putting him behind a tree. So it's not allowing that fire to really flourish. So yeah, I quite liked it. And the commentary surrounding it as well, they were always talking about it, about how challenging it is. And I think it's quite nice to see.
Well, I mean, the scores on alternate shot were, if you were under par, you had a good day. Weren't they? Like, it was basically if you were one under, you'd had a good day. And I think what I loved about the format was the amount of players that were in the top 10 that I was like, I've genuinely not heard of him before.
Yeah,
I've not heard of him before. Like, is it Ventura who was playing with Hovland? I was like, I know he's on the PGA Tour, but I haven't seen him at any event in the he's not been on the leaderboard. All of a sudden, him and Hovland are freaking knocking in birdies for fun. And I was like, why don't you bring this game every week? Like, where is this game? Like, why isn't this in here?
And also, you get, I think, because like, over the weekend, you see new people kind of playing that you won't necessarily see and get the coverage. And then also, you pick out different people and you find out different bits about them because they've pieced themselves together as a team because of a set reason. Like, for me, Werenski and Uline were a team. Mm. Now, normally, they wouldn't have jumped out, but they were a team because they both come from Massachusetts. I spent a year of my life in Massachusetts, so I've got kind of an affinity to it. So I was ending up kind of feeling like I was rooting for them to start pushing up the table. So it's, again, it comes back to what we've spoken about before. The team creates like almost a tribal feeling towards it. And you feel like you're actually supporting something rather than just watching your favorite golfers play golf.
Yeah, love it.
Yeah, I kind of similar to what you guys are saying. I think the reason I really enjoyed it is because when we play, alternates in pairings is actually one of my personal favorite formats to play that we play. Now, right. Generally speaking, the only time that we really play it has historically been if we're abroad for, let's say, a 4 or 5 day stretch. Certainly a couple of years ago when we were just sort of starting to play or starting to get back into it, we would always have the first day of the holiday, the first round would always be alternate shots. And the rationale for that, unless I'm getting this completely wrong, is that it made it a little bit more fun and took a little bit of the pressure off because you're playing with one other person and, you know, you've always got a chance, right? If you're playing with another person.
So we, on the first day, when was this, going back a couple of years ago? I don't know what you did last time out, but we play a scramble, don't we?
Yes.
So the reason the pressure is off is because if you hit a shit one, I'm really hoping that someone else hits a good one and we'll play from there anyway. But yeah, the alternate shot thing, I think, is great.
I just wonder what the point I was going to make.
As I slice one off into the trees. Sorry, Tim.
Yeah.
Go find that one.
Right. Okay. So Chris is sliced. I mean, you're saying you slice one off in the trees. We're both knowing if we're playing in a pairing, who's more likely to be slicing it into the trees. And it's very much me. But what I was going to say with it, I wonder how much the playing in a team and playing in an alternate strokes format, if that relaxes one or the other or both of the players. I wonder if it relaxes the lower ranked player a little bit and then potentially gives a bit of an opportunity to really kind of excel and show their best stuff. I don't know. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I would say so, because I you've got to think that the players are there. Yeah, ultimately they're there to, you know, for a paycheck and to go and win. But they're also there because they're good friends with the person, and they're heading there because they think, oh, this would be quite fun. And it's something I listened to a podcast today. They nailed it on the head when they said that, look, it gives an opportunity for the lower ranked players to experience a team event. You think about the Ryder Cup; it's such a special and unique event, but only a select few players are ever going to get the chance to do it. And events like that give golfers the opportunity to play a team sport, which, you know, as we all know, golf's a solitary sport. And to have a team event is very unique. And for the lower ranked players, I bet they absolutely loved it to have that opportunity.
Also, you see GMAC hole in one. He hits the hole in one, and I'm pretty sure he hasn't even realized. He's like, he's turned away from the ball.
Oh, very nonchalant. And he just,
and then Matt Wallace, and this is what I love about the team aspect of the game. Matt Wallace goes freaking mental. He's like, yes, like pushing her out. Like, yes, we've got, like, because that's helped them make the weekend. Like, that's huge. And like, and I just thought that was fantastic. That's his first hole in one on the PGA Tour as well.
Is it? Mm. Wow. I thought we had that. Fair enough. Chaps, anything more on PGA event, even?
Nope.
Really battling the ability to actually speak at the moment. That's not good for a podcast, is it? Right. I'm going to move things along before I absolutely lose the plot altogether. Ben, now, you just mentioned the phrase playing for a paycheck. Interesting, odd, weird, interesting news breaking over the last week. I'm pretty sure all of us have heard about it. I'm pretty sure most of you guys out there listening have heard about this. And that is the PGA Tour's new Player Impact Fund. Now, if you haven't heard about this, this is basically how it works. So it's a $40 million kitty. Now, this is going to get split between 10 golfers to recognize and reward players who positively move the needle by generating coverage for the sport. The biggest share, $8 million, will go to the individual deemed most valuable. So it's basically a bonus and a kitty for players who generate coverage for themselves and the PGA Tour. I've been going round and round my head about how I feel about this, and I messaged the boys just before we came on the air about this. I've very much found myself in one side of the argument on this one. But just before I kind of go off on that, Chris, do you want to talk to me a little bit about this? What do you think? What do you know about this? And what are your vibes about this?
Okay. I'm going to be careful here. Can I let some of you guys go first? Because what I want to do is I'm not on board with it, but I want to try and present an argument that could be for or some different options.
Okay.
Rather than just slate it off the bat, which I could quite easily do, I want to hear the other side of it, and then I want to come in and I'm going to try and give a different viewpoint on it. Not that I agree with that different viewpoint, I just want to give a different viewpoint on it.
So this for once is not you sitting on the fence, because that's what you normally do when we have these kind of discussions. It's not that for once. Okay, I reckon I can see where you're going with this, and I can kind of see which side of it you're going to argue. I actually don't know where Ben's head is on this. I know where Chris's head is on this. I know where my head's on this. Ben, where's your head on this?
Yeah, so I've wrote down a few notes on this, and it's going to come across quite cynical, but ultimately I don't really understand the point of it. And kind of here's why. I read something today. It said that in 2019, if this were done in 2019, the leaderboard would have looked like this. Obviously, Tiger's at the top. Obviously, Rory McIlroy's up there. It would then go Brooks, Phil, Ricky Fowler, Jordan Spieth, Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas, Justin Rose, Adam Scott. So at the time, 10 of the best players in the world. So basically, you're just going to be giving more money to the best players in the world. Like, all right, I get that. But what's the point?
Do we know what they're basing it? Is it as simple as social media following, how many posts you do, how many times you turn out to the PGA and run, you know, corporate events or whatever? Like, what are we talking?
So there's six different metrics. I don't know all of them, but here was an interesting one which caught my eye. So they're using something called the MVP index, which measures the value of engagement on social media and digital channels. Guess whose dad started the company?
Oh, here we go.
Jordan Spieth. Really? So it's like, right, let's just hand out contracts to our mates. Can't work out whether it's the PGA Tour or the British government at the moment. That's a different story. It's all that. I thought, that's a bit odd. The amount of time spent on TV, that's being used as a metric. But it's already the big players. So, like, to get more time on TV, surely you've got to start doing either playing ridiculously well, which it's a PGA Tour. They're the best players in the world. The best players are the best for the reason. Or you've got to start acting like a dick, and it becomes a bit of a circus. Because Billy Horschel the other week, when he was slamming the clubs into his bag, wasn't playing particularly well, but he got on the TV because he was having a tantrum. Yeah, is it going to start encouraging that sort of stuff? Because
I would assume the PGA would deem that not positive light on the PGA.
You say that, but Google hits are being used as a metric. Google searches. Think of the amount of people that would have, you know, chat like this. Someone said, oh, did you see Billy Horschel chat? No, I'm going to have a look. Da-da-dum, bang on Google. First thing that comes up. Sweet, Billy Horschel's been searched for. I'm sure that, you know, they're going to have to have wheedled that sort of stuff out. But I can't help but think it's a bit of a reach from the PGA Tour to try and grow the game. And I think it's the wrong way to go about it. The word that I wrote down is circus. And with particularly relevant today with the Logan Paul Floyd Mayweather match being announced, boxing is heading down a very dark alley with all of these gimmicky fights with YouTube stars. I'm not saying golf is heading that way yet, but I kind of feel like just let the guys play golf. Yeah, rather than worry about their own being entertainers on social media and crap like that. I don't know. That's me being cynical.
I'm gonna weigh on this, and I'm going to go full beans on this. I hate this. I hate this fund. I hate the whole idea and complex of it. Right. There's a load of reasons why.
6 hours later.
Try and breathe, Tim. Don't get too over the top. This is $40 million. That goes a long way. You can do a lot with that. so much with that to grow the game. You've got supporting growth of the game in, I don't know, communities that have been traditionally underrepresented or don't have access to golf. You know, there's a load of people out there who can't even get to play golf. Golf is not a cheap sport to take up, right? We all know that. There's just something that really reeks when you're talking about 10 golfers who generate the most coverage in the world. To be honest, if they're already generating that much coverage, they're going to be doing okay for themselves financially.
100%.
Now, I don't want to go and say they don't need more money, because I don't, you know, that can be argued, but there are so many more things you can do with that cash. We literally, a few weeks ago, we talked about the, I don't want to go deep on it, but the Justin Thomas incident earlier in the season. You know, what about using funds to, I don't know, support communities, or do more education around how to conduct yourself, or the way that you, if you say and change certain perceptions of the sport. What golf needs is not the richer players getting richer. It's about shifting the perceptions of the game, right? The overarching perception of this game still in 2021 is, it is, let's be honest, largely white guys getting richer. However you think about it, it is largely that. I think there is so much that could be done with the revenue that the PGA generates that I just think the money's going in the wrong place. Now, that's, sorry, that was first point, which I went off on one. The other side of it, that's point one. Write that one down.
Honestly, mate, I'm kind of butt in it, and absolutely support you with that, because $40 million is a hell of a lot of money. If you are looking to get people involved in the game, you are looking to generate more interest, well, they're not going to be searching for Brooks Koepka, Rory McIlroy, whatever. Exactly. They need the opportunities. They need access to golf courses to find out how great the game is. People don't care. The people that don't care are mostly because they don't really know about the game. How is rewarding the top pros on social media going to help influence that? Don't get it. Sorry.
The other thing that worries me about this, and this is an article I was reading today, is that, I don't know if this is fact or if this is opinion, so don't quote me on this as being fact, because I don't know if it is. But apparently a big reason for the scheme being created is to launch the threat of an insurgent Premier League of golf, a breakaway competition, whereby in that competition, effectively, you guarantee players money to compete on the circuit. This sounds strangely familiar with what's been going on in the world of sport for the last 2 weeks, doesn't it? Yeah. But so the PGA's thinking on this is, right, there's a rival competition, potentially, where some of the top names in our game might get convinced to join that game, that event, sorry, by guaranteed money. And our way of distinguishing ourselves from that competition is that we're just going to take those same players and pay them more money. It doesn't add up. It's just not right. It just doesn't work in my head. I don't like it at all.
It's not great PR for the PGA Tour, I have to admit. It doesn't look great.
There we go. Initial rant over. I'll hand over to you now, Chris.
Okay. So I totally agree with you. I do. I think this is a bonkers idea. However, I want to try and argue, not argue, I just want to kind of go, right, what's the other point of view on this? How could they, maybe this is a different topic, how could they better use it, right? Is it just misaligned? Is the idea moving in the right direction? They just got the execution wrong. It's funny that you bring up the whole Logan Paul stuff, Ben. PGA Tour, do they put in money into prize funds? Do we know? Because I've got no idea.
Do the PGA?
Does the PGA itself, the PGA Tour itself, put money into prize funds, or is it all pure sponsorship
and things? No, like that? I'm fairly certain it'll be a blend of the two.
Are you reckon? Okay, so I don't know the answer, but I was actually going to assume not. I was going to assume that their revenue for prize money did not come from the PGA Tour. I don't know. I don't know how it all works. But my thought process was going along the lines of, you talk about the Logan Pauls of the world, right? Big YouTube stars. They'll sell out more fights than professional boxers right now. like they'll make more money on boxing than professional boxers will make because of the size of their audience, because of who they are and what they do. They all get started on things like YouTube. YouTube as a platform doesn't pay its creators, right? The PGA doesn't pay its players. And yet all the money for YouTube comes from its creators, comes from the Logan Pauls of the world, right? So in my opinion, YouTube should pay the Logan Pauls of the world because they are earning literally billions off that creator and paying them nothing, right? Is that the same in that Logan Paul's making a lot of money elsewhere? He's making a lot of money with sponsorships. He's making a lot of money with partnerships with his own businesses, etc. But nothing from the platform that he is growing, right? My view could be seen as, is that the same on the PGA Tour? The PGA Tour doesn't play the players, and yet the players are what make the tour, right? The players are the ones that are sure they're getting prize money if they're playing well. I appreciate that. But every single player adds value of a level to the PGA Tour and does not get remuneration for it. Timbo.
Yeah, but see, the problem with that is, I get that. That makes sense. But that's why prize fund based on performance is the way it is.
Sure.
The danger with this is it's online coverage. Now, I don't want to... I'm like, I am going to dig him out. Ricky Fowler needs to stop doing buddy promotional material because he's been off form for like about 2 years now. I'm still pretty sure that he's going to take a slice of that purse right now based on earned media value in the last 12 months.
Why shouldn't he? Because I would say he's a typical player that I think is adding a huge amount of value to grow.
But he's already getting paid. He's already getting paid by Cobra or Farmers or whatever it is.
Sure. And again, this is where I agree. I do agree with you. I'm just preventing the other side of it. Players are already motivated to grow their audience, right? Because the bigger the audience you've got, the more sponsorship opportunities will come your way, the more those sponsors will pay you. So they're already fairly motivated to put content out there. Like I don't see why an extra slice of 40 million is really going because they're like, well, I'm already making, you know, how much is he making from Cobra? Like how much, like they're already making a significant amount from their sponsorships anyway. If they're already, I basically don't see anyone new who's not doing social media to suddenly start doing social media. Like, I don't think that's going to happen as a result of this. But I do get that the PGA Tour could pay the people. But I don't think it should be limited to 10. Basically, what I'm saying is if you take that 40 million and you were going to say, okay, here is everybody who competed on the PGA Tour and break it down as a percentage, I think that would be one way that they could do it. I'm not saying that would work. My other feeling is this. I'm now not arguing for it. Shit, I've gone the wrong way. I'm finding this really hard. That I think will be my main argument for it, i.e. the platform doesn't pay its creators or the PGA Tour doesn't pay its players, and they're the ones that create. The PGA makes a lot of money off those players and they do not pay them back apart from reward money.
Yeah, but we're talking about the richer players getting richer. We're not talking about Will Zalatoris or Dylan Fratelli. We're talking about DJ and Rory, who already top the earnings list. It just rankles a little with me a little bit that those other guys are just going to be ignored. Also, sorry, one more thing from me. That $40 million, if it's about kind of trying to grow, if it's, for, look, let's be cynical. It's about protecting the PGA. It's not about rewarding players. It's about protecting the PGA. Let's be brutally honest, right? Would that $40 million not be better spent making a all or nothing series for Amazon Prime based on the PGA Tour?
God, yes, please.
That would be good. I'd even go one step. Here's where I would go, because it is are they saying this is coming out of our marketing budget? Because if they're saying this is coming out of our marketing budget, what else could we do? That would be bloody amazing. I don't know. I've not seen that pitched anywhere, Tim. Let's take that to Amazon now. We'll go create it. And we'll be the directors of that. That would be great.
Yep.
I'm in.
The, tour, they talk about growing the game, right?
Ben's there in the background. Don't forget about me.
Take me, please.
Take me with me.
I meant the three of us. They talk about growing the game. Now, interestingly, have you seen the LPGA hoodie that's been going around over the last couple of weeks? Some big names, not in the world of golf, in the world of basketball, I want to say, wearing LPGA hoodies. Now, that is where this thing gets interesting. What if you took that 40 million and said to anyone, it's not just social media, it's you have gone to and promoted LPGA events, Ladies European Tour events. Like, you've gone to youth grassroots levels. Like, you've gone to events. So, Brooks, yeah, you went to a youth event, you promoted it, you played, you got involved, there was content filmed, etc. That, I then go, okay, this is interesting. Will Zalatoris goes to a juniors event or to a women's event or whatever, right? And is putting the spotlight on other people. Not that then gets interesting.
Actually investing kind of, yeah, I guess charitable time, like donating their time instead of just going about their normal lives and doing exactly what they were going to do anyway. I think it's almost like the PGA needed something to wrap up in a bow, the fact that they were just going to pay their top players anyway to stay on the PGA Tour. It is, you know, as I can't remember who mentioned it. It's just a way to protect the PGA Tour. That is it. It's to keep the players there. And they always needed a reason and a marketing campaign to say, we've got this initiative going on. No one really cares. And I think in 6 months' time, if it's not broadcast to us and spoken about all the time, we would have probably all forgotten about it because we all just expect that the players would just get paid. And
I agree. Put that 40 million into, I don't know, the Corn Ferry Tour, if you're the PGA Tour, put it into women's, put it into kids' grassroots. I'm 100% with you. I was just trying to present the other side of the coin, as it were.
Yeah, the other thing with the way that my understanding of most sponsorship arrangements, the way they work with players, is that the fees that they get paid, a large amount of that will be calculated based on the earned media value that player generates. So they're already getting paid for this.
Of course.
They're already getting paid for this stuff.
Of course. And that's where my question comes down to, is it actually just generic social media posting, or is it actually PGA Tour, like, promoting the tour? Is it actually promoting the tour? That's what they're focusing on. If it's just general social media, then yeah, this is bonkers.
Question to you two on this. Do you think it will change players much? Do you think it will change their behaviours on course? Or do you think people are just still going to do exactly the same as what they did? And it just, everything stays the same.
I can see a really annoying future where you've got the famous golfer, the Instagram golfer, the funny golfer, you know, them as personalities, not as athletes. And that...
But they should be personalities. Like,
No. If you're a professional athlete, you're a professional athlete first and foremost. If you want to do other stuff and have passion pieces on the side, that's all cool. There's no problem with that. But you are an athlete first and foremost. What freaks me out is when you have a prize fund, which is just based around how many, I don't know, likes you get or how many hits you get on YouTube.
So basically, the female golfers, you're basically just encouraging them to get naked.
I didn't say that.
No, but you are. But if this was the LPGA, to get likes on Instagram, women just get their boobs out, right? Great. Like So I'll see where you're going with that. Sorry,
it could go that way. I'm not advocating that. Obviously, I don't want it to go that way. But yeah, I see your point. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I see what you mean. I don't think it's a bad thing. Players showcasing them on social media. No. I don't mean. I see where you kind of taking that. I don't think it's a bad thing to see into players' worlds anymore, like more than what we do. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that allows you to get to know players better. It would be no different to than having the Amazon documentary, Tim, seeing into their world. Why not just do that on their social media? So I think I would like to see more of that.
It's the on-course behaviour. That's the bit that concerns me.
I genuinely don't think it would. I don't. If anyone's not already building a following on social media, I don't know why the promise of this money would make you, because that you're already motivated. Sponsors are literally paying you to grow your following. Like, so I don't know why, if that's not motivating you already, why an extra carrot would, like, I don't think it would change it. I honestly don't think it would.
So I just did a quick Google search, found the document I was reading earlier on. The six different metrics they're using: a position on season-ending FedEx points list, so it's rewarding good play, which you're fine with. Popularity in Google search, questionable, because you could be Google searched for any number of things. I'm sure Tiger Woods crashed his car recently. That had quite a few Google searches. Nielsen brand exposure rating, which places a value on exposure the player delivers to sponsors. I'm assuming that sponsors that directly sponsor the PGA Tour, not individual player sponsors.
Yeah, I was going to say, because otherwise they're already doing that.
Yeah. Q rating, which measures familiarity and appeal of players' brand, which...
So that's a positive thing.
Yeah, but that concerns me a little bit, because there's a lot of shit personal branding going on. Kevin Na and Bryson DeChambeau being two players right there. People like that are going to be leaning on that even more so, thinking, I'm going to get myself $8 million. Yeah, okay. MVP index rating, which is owned by Jordan Spieth's father, is the value of engagement player drives across digital and social media platforms. Okay, so I'm guessing that's just all about engagement. And the final one, nice title, Meltwater Mention, frequency with which the player generates coverage across all media platforms. So that's TV and socials as well, which... I get and understand that one. That is the basis of all sponsorship, I guess. If it's getting eyeballs, people are going to want to pay more money for it. And ultimately, the PGA Tour can generate more money. But the best players are already on the screens. So how are you deciding that?
Yeah, I the only argument I have, and this is exactly what you've said, is it's protecting the tour, right? And if I was, and I'm going to come back to my YouTube example, it probably already does exist. If a new YouTube comes up and says, we will pay, what did Joe Rogan? Joe Rogan went from Apple Podcasts purely to Spotify, and Spotify paid him millions and millions of dollars to do that, because every single one of his audience comes across to Spotify to start listening to it, to him there. I get that's the point of view that I am. From a business point of view, I understand if the platform is not paying its creators, if the tour is not paying its players, the big players, are they at risk of leaving? Yes. So yes, it is a purely, as you said, protecting the tour.
I think their $40 million would be better spent supporting like a newish kind of setup kind of program based, you know, hosted by three guys who are just kind of average golfers and talk about life from the average point of view. I think that would be good content, you know?
I'm going to level with you, Tim. If they gave us $40 million, I couldn't spend it. I wouldn't know what to spend it on. I'd be like, wait, we've got a camera, we've got some new microphones. We've filmed our Amazon Prime documentary. We've got 39 million left. Anyone want to what do you want to do with this?
Yeah, we made one episode. Just give it to us. Don't give it to us, give it to people who need it.
Create some good content.
Give it to good. There are good people out there that need the money more than the top 10 players. Anyway, Chris, before we move on, I think there's a little section that you wanted to talk about. I'm going to tease you up here.
You have, So how am I going to leave with this? The race to Dubai. Have you guys been paying any attention? Following on from our chat about, is the European Tour in trouble last week? The race to Dubai. Have you guys been paying any attention to the leaderboard of the race to Dubai?
I honestly wouldn't have known that there's been a European Tour event going on over this past 6 weeks to 2 months.
Fair. Really fair. Number one on the race to Dubai. Either of you know who it is right now?
Hideki Matsuyama.
Patrick Reed.
Billy Horschel.
Nah.
Right.
How many, and this is where I get to, and I'll go through the averages here. Billy Horschel, outside of the Masters, outside of the two WGC events that have been played, so that's three events, has played zero European Tour events. So, it's for the Race to Dubai rankings, your majors count, all your majors and all your WGC events count. Billy Horschel is top based on his performance in the Masters, the WGC match play and WGC Workday Championship, but has played zero events on the European Tour outside of those three. So my question is going to be, and we're going to look through this in a bit more detail, should that be allowed? Should you be able to get to the end of the season, and it's happened or very close to happening last season, and be able to be in with a chance of winning the Race to Dubai, having not played a single European Tour event outside of the majors and the WGC events? That's the main question where I'm coming from, so I'll let that sit with you. There have so far been, outside of those three events, 8 European Tour events. So it's not been a busy season, I'll come on that, but there have been 8 events out of that. In the top 10, if we take the top 10 players of the Race to Dubai, I'll read them out for you. So we've got Billy Horschel, Tyrrell Hatton in second, Colin Morikawa in third, Will Zalatoris in fourth, also played zero European Tour events outside of the Masters and WGCs. But interesting to note, he is in the Race to Dubai. He's not in the FedEx Cup. He's not allowed to be in the FedEx Cup. I can't remember if we touched on this a couple of weeks ago, because he doesn't actually have a PGA Tour card. So unless he wins an event this year, he won't be going to the playoffs, which is freaking bonkers. Fifth, Jason Scribner. Sixth, Paul Casey. 7, Victor Hovland. 8, Rory McIlroy. 9, Justin Rose. 10, Tony Finau. Outside,
all of whom, when I have switched over to European Tour events, outside of Saudi and Dubai, have not been there.
That's going to be my next question. What's the one event they've all played, apart from Will Zalatoris and Billy Horschel?
Saudi.
Wonder why?
Cash monies. Serious cash to just go there.
Actually, that's a lie. Colin Morikawa didn't play Saudi. He's the only one. So they were all basically either Saudi or Dubai, Abu Dhabi, etc. The average number of events on the European Tour that those 10 have played, Billy is zero, you know Will Zalatoris is zero. What's the average number of events that top 10 have played on the European Tour, do you reckon, so far, out of 8?
1.5.
Yeah. Not even 0.9.
1.5 is spot on. 1.5 is spot on. And that's because Tyrrell Hatton and Jason Scrivener and Justin Rose have played 3, and they played Abu Dhabi, Dubai, and Saudi.
The 3 biggest purse tournaments, right?
And then this is now where it gets interesting. If you're ranked 11th to 20th, so you've got Jon Rahm, who also has played 0 events outside of the majors, but again, you know, PGA Tour, whatever. Robert McIntyre, Antoine Rosner, Victor Pérez, Tommy Fleetwood, Maximilian Kiefer, Higo, Stone, Garcia, Cabrera Bayo. Out of the 8 possible events on the European Tour, average for those guys?
It's not going to be much more. 2, 3?
2.5.
4.
Okay.
Wow. So Maximilian Kiefer and Garrick Higo, 16 and 17, have played all 8.
That's going to massively inflate that average rating, isn't it?
So they've played all 8 and are 16th and 17th compared to Billy Horschel, who's in first and hasn't played a single European Tour event. Is that right, is my question for you two. Should that be allowed?
I thought it was confusing last year when you'd see it the whole season that Colin Morikawa was in with the hunt. And then because he was in with the hunt after winning the PGA and doing well in the majors and the WGCs, it gave him the opportunity to then go and play for the season ending championship. You're like, it's not right. The gap is huge currently between the European Tour and PGA. You know, there's a reason why all of the big boys from Europe are over there playing now. Mm-hmm. And it's not because the European Tour is in a better state than the PGA Tour is. It's obvious. And because of that, I don't feel like it's helping itself the way it is at the moment. But then I don't think if you were to reroute it, it would help itself going that way. So they're in a really sticky situation, because at the moment, at least if the big players know they have the potential to go to the season ending tournament and go and win it, well, then they at least turn up. I don't think it should happen. WGCs and majors in their own right are incredible events. I just don't think they should count towards ranking points for Race to Dubai or the FedEx Cup, personally. World ranking points, I get, but FedEx Cup and Race to Dubai, no, I don't think so. So I would quite like to see it removed, because the amount of European Tour players that play turn up week in, week out that would be significantly higher on the leaderboard if the guys who are already getting paid an absolute stonking amount of cash weren't up there.
What I haven't been able to work out is if we remove those events, where these players would be. But my guess would, Colin Morikawa didn't, I can't remember where he finished in Dubai. I think he played, did he? I can't remember what. Rory's only played one, Victor's only, Hovland's only played, but they've all come across there. So if you take those three events out, I don't reckon the top 10 would look, well, it definitely wouldn't. Billy Horschel wouldn't be there. Will Zalatoris wouldn't be there. Your top 10 would look very, very different. Sorry, Tim, you go. Where do you stand?
No, to be honest, like I'm same sort of place as Ben, to be honest, because the natural inclination is to go, no, that's not right. That, you know, you can basically not play an event on the European Tour, but still be in the running to lead the standings for the European Tour. No, obviously that's not right. But the flip side of it is you need to encourage the biggest names in the game to come over and be involved with the European Tour, right? That's how you grow it and you keep it relevant and you stop it from just being like the, I don't know, the Europa League to the PGA's Champions League, which, to be honest, let's be honest, it kind of is at the moment. Ben's exactly right. The solution of saying no, it shouldn't count, isn't actually the solution to how you protect the European Tour. So it's really difficult. So how do you do it? Do you sort of say, obviously a finite number of events that you have to play across, I don't know, every 2 months or 3 months, you have to play X number of events for your points to count.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Because the other thing that's difficult is let's say you're a European who's come on the scene and you've slogged your arse off for like week after week, month after month, and you're racking up, let's say, top 25 finishes. Let's say you've never been outside the top 25 and you had, I don't know, 10 top 10 finishes, let's say, in European events.
Higo won this weekend, right?
Yeah.
And so he's won an event on the European Tour and he's played 8 and he's 17th.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, if you're that player, and you've grinded and you've traveled all around the locations. You know, let's be honest, the European Tour isn't just the European Tour. You go to Asia and South Africa and all these places. All I'd be thinking was, well, imagine if you'd been doing that and then someone who's played literally 4 or 5 events and is jet over from the States just takes your space.
No, has played 3 events all in the States.
Yeah,
right, and then so plays Dubai, plays Abu Dhabi, and then comes across to the final.
Yeah. So it's obviously not right, but I don't have the brain other than to say there's going to be that X number of events to qualify for the Race to Dubai of how you fix it and how you fix it in the grander scheme of things with what the European Tour needs in order to kind of cut through and survive.
I can imagine the European Tour love it from a marketing perspective because they can say, oh, look, in our events, they're the top players there. But the trickle down negatives to the players that we just spoke about, the guy who's 17th, you know, who knows? He could be up in top 5 spots had all these players not been there. And that could be the difference between a guy generating 5 new sponsors and not, or.
And a lot of prize money.
Yeah, and a lot of prize money. And it's, again, it's, I don't know. Being cynical again, it goes back to what we've spoken about with the PGA Tour reward system thing. It's let's just funnel more money into the top players, which is ultimately going to negatively impact the players who are, you know, not in the top 50, 100 in the world.
Does it stop a European version of a Will Zalatoris coming through the way it is at the moment?
Well, I mean, the PGA seems to be screwing over Will Zalatoris at the moment, to be fair.
Well, that's true. Yes.
See, that's an interesting example itself. But I would say all it's doing, it would be encouraging more people to go to the PGA.
Mm. Well, I have to admit, from my perspective, because I see that those players have played just PGA Tour events, well, then I'm like, well, clearly there's not a lot going on in the European Tour events, so might as well just watch the PGA, because they're the bigger. Even it almost looks like the European Tour are prioritizing and rewarding PGA Tour events more than their own events.
Yeah,
and that just seems bonkers.
I get that they had the Abu Dhabi, Dubai, Saudi swing at the beginning, right? And that was kind of early before most of the major events in the PGA got started. So I get that that's why they've come across and played those events. One event, Rory won, Colin Morikawa won, Victor Hovland won. Like, I just find it bonkers that you can play zero events on the European Tour and be number one.
Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, the other thing to this, and this is me taking it a load of steps on, is that it's very confusing, right? How the two work together and what the European Tour is, basically, and who's going to play on it. It's very confused and it's not very clear. My thought and potential worry is it's a situation that is, if you are a business with a shed load of cash, it's almost like a situation to wander into and sort of say, right, this doesn't really work as well as it should. That doesn't really work as well as it should. Why don't we just create a global golf super league and have one event?
But they should.
Only one plays on.
But they should. They should have a world tour. I'm all for a world tour. If it's run by the PGA Tour, whoever it's run by, but this is kind of where I'm getting to. I'm like, this becomes silly. This becomes genuinely, I'm like, this becomes pointless.
Yeah.
Unless you're actually going to reward the players that are playing on the European Tour week in, week out. Because this is just the PGA Tour's this may as well be the PGA Tour top 10. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, this is just silly.
Yeah, I mean, it's only a matter of time before there is a top tier tour. Try saying that a few times. A top tier tour, and then having two tours underneath it, and then it would just kind of have a pyramid of tours underneath, which all funnel up into the main tour.
I think you
just
would
to try and have one golden tour of the PGA Tour, and then kind of like the European Tour was almost like this ugly stepsister on the side at the moment, trying to get in. I think it would work.
I think World Golf Tour, and then each continent has its own regional tour, which you then qualify to go up to the World Tour. I think that would work. But yeah, that's going off topic. That's going on to a whole new thing. I just wanted to, because when I saw this, I was like, that's bonkers. That, for me, that's not okay. Like, how you can go and, like, again, the guys who are playing all eight events, obviously they're not getting to come. They might have done the opportunity to come play the WGCs, etc. I'm just like, how do you fix that? And Tim, I think I actually really like your idea. I think the idea of you have to have played X number of events outside of the majors and the WGCs to qualify, I think that's probably the best way to do it. But then again, I think the European Tour won't do that because they'd lose that top 10.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But that's exactly that, right? Like, if you invoke that rule, then you potentially stop the biggest names in the game coming over. And then, exactly as Ben says, you're not solving what probably is the real problem, which is my very bad analogy of the Europa League being like the European Tour being like the Europa League and the PGA Tour being like the Champions League. Terrible analogy. I apologize.
Let's do this for a minute. Let's say you made it three events. Tyrrell Hatton will be number one. Jason Scrivener will be second. Justin Rose would be third, Robert McIntyre fourth, Antoine Rosen the fifth, Victor Perez, Fleetwood, Kiefer, Higo, Stone, Rafa.
I mean, that if you're talking about a European Tour, that kind of sounds like how you would probably expect a European Tour top 10 to sound like, right?
Correct. Yeah. Like, and that for me makes sense.
Can't believe I've solved another problem.
You solved it, Tim. Excellent. And on that bombshell, we'll move on.
We're going to leave that there. That was a thoroughly enjoyable conversation. I'm actually going to draw a line under this week right there, unless you boys have any more to add onto proceedings this time.
Nope.
Nothing. Who's playing this weekend? Where are you playing? Who with?
Pine Ridge, hoping to get you persuade your brother out, but Holty is out this weekend, and Lyle. So there's at least three of us, possibly four.
Okay. So look forward to hearing about how that's gone next week. I'm not out at all. I may try and go to the range on Friday. That's about as much as I'm going to be able to squeeze in. Life and house admin for me over the weekend, unfortunately. Ben, you must be ranging, or you will be hitting golf balls in the next week without shouting it out.
I am playing golf. I'm doubling up this weekend. I'm playing golf Saturday and Sunday. Although Saturday is not booked in yet. And the forecast over here is nay great. And both me and my playing partner are of the same mindset.
Wait. Do you mean to tell me that your round on Saturday is pending the weather?
Pending the weather, yes. It's currently looking 14 degrees and rain. And
you are an embarrassment.
Actually, I'm golfing. Either Wanstead or Ilford Golf Club. Just fairly local. I don't like the rain. So we're going to wait and hold off on that one. And then probably the final outing for the trolley on public transport on Sunday. Got to try and make it down to Croydon for 8 a.m. from Canning Town, which is a very early start.
Where are you playing?
Where are you playing?
Selsdon.
With who?
lads from uni. Uni boys.
Ouch, Timbo. That's... Not that Tim's a member there,
are you? I basically am.
It wasn't me who instigated it. I just got the invite. I kind of feel like I was a replacement as well. I was the late coming fourth. The other three were all set. So
okay, very good. I'll tell you what. Let me know how you're getting on. Let me know how you get on the 17th. It's a beautiful golf hole. The other thing I'll say is, if you're listening to this and you're in the sort of North East London vicinity and you're looking for a round on Saturday, it's probably going to be a spare tea time going at one of those two golf clubs. So keep your ear to the ground. There you go. Unbelievable scenes when golf rounds are already potentially being called off days in advance just because it's a bit of rain. But there you go. There's Ben Fowlis in a nutshell for you. Right. That is definitely it for this week. As always, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Catch you later.
See you later, guys.
Hi, guys. Thanks so much for listening. If you've enjoyed, as ever, please do us a favor and leave us a review. It massively helps us out. This podcast is brought to you by Sunday Red Golf. Are you looking to join a golf club, but you don't know where to start? Sunday Red is an online golf club where we host events, we broadcast content, we have coaching clinics and much, much more. Head on over to sundayredgolf.co.uk for more. Also, as we return to golf, how would you like to create your very own competition between you and your mates? Something like your very own Race to Dubai, which we talked about on this podcast. If you like the idea of that, head on over to tourchamp.co.